Let's see, I'm sorry. Today we'll hear a talk on steps 4 and 5 with a focus on fear and sex from Mike M. from Nashville, Tennessee. Let's give a warm welcome to Mike from Tennessee, Nashville.
Hey, everybody. I'm Mike Miller. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm glad to be here. I'm going to use, actually, if you want to follow along, I'm actually going to be using as my outline page 67 and page 68, as well as 69. So, and let me start on 67, and where I kind of find we get our first inkling of what we need to do is in the second paragraph, in the third paragraph, where it says, where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And so that's where we see the call for looking at our fear. And when we're doing the fourth step, we're documenting that and are looking at those resentments, but then it's asking us to look at what was our part in that. And that's when we really have to pay attention specifically to fear. So it goes on to say, notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mrs. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. These short words somehow touch every aspect of our life. It's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shut through with this, and it sets in motion a train of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? So, you know, this is, we're called to kind of share how our brains work when it comes to this. And in my reality, there really is only two motivators, and that is fear and love. And I believe that fear is an illusion. And I'll discuss that a little bit. I mean, one of my favorite short sayings is, fear knocks, faith answers, nobody's there. And I think that's the reality of it, because I believe that, you know, there's my will, which is the ego. There's God's will, which is spirit. The ego produces fear, and the spirit produces peace and love. So I think that is why it's talking about this evil corroding thread, the fabric of our existence. That's what I'm made of. I'm made of fear, and I'm made of love. The last part I added, but fear is so in such depth part of us that we don't know that it is separate from us. And for me, when it's still ego, when I'm not getting my way, that's resentment. Then when I'm not getting my way in the past, that's resentment. When I'm not getting my way right now, that's anger. And when I'm not getting my way, I think in the future, that's fear. And I'm always being pushed to the past, to the future, because my only contact point with God is now. So my ego is going to try to keep me from them. You know, Sandy Beach said that there's really only one question. God is everything, or God is everything, or God is nothing. What should it be? What shall it be? And if God is everything, love, and I believe that, then fear is nothing and an illusion. So I think inherently so many times we think, I hear so many often with my sponsees, well, fear is a good thing. Fear motivates things. There's books written about the benefits of fear and how fear can produce things. And sadly, I hear that same thing with anger, in that anger can be a motivator. Anger is a motivator of change, and anger is a good thing in sometimes. And in my reality, there's never a reason for fear and there's never a reason for anger. They work sometimes. I mean, we're hardwired in that we have anxiety. And I know that, my professional, I'm a physician, so I deal with things and the ramifications. And I would say, sadly, one of the largest reasons for everything I see is fear, anxiety, and stress. And that's sad, because it doesn't have to be that way. And thankfully, we belong into a program that can give us some answers instead of just discussing the problems. But I have to realize how hardwired fear is into me and how much that is a tool, because I can use anger to motivate myself and others. I can use fear to motivate myself and others. I can use a cattle prod to motivate myself and others. But that doesn't mean in the long run that's a great idea. It will work, but eventually the ramifications of doing that make it not a useful tool for me. So, I know for me, anger and fear are tightly bound. I'm here to talk about fear. And fear is something that on the next sentence, it says, sometimes we think fear ought to be classified or classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. And to me, what that's saying is, it's emphasizing the fact to me that stealing is something we think of volitionally, where I can choose to steal or not to steal. But I want to try to keep fear separate, where fear is something I don't have any control over. I'm just afraid. It's just fear. I'm doing this because of fear. And it my ego would like to tell me it's outside of my control. But stealing I can work on. But they're the same thing. They're in the same class. And I do have a way to deal with fear. Not only do I have a way, there's only, in my thinking, one way to deal with fear. And that is to choose the other side of the coin. We review our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, and that's where we get to what we're talking about today. We write down everything that we're afraid of, and even the things we're afraid of. It all goes down there, mainly so we can see how much it's the fabric of our existence. Because when we really look at fear, it is a large part of everything that we do, why we do what we do, and what we think we ought to do. We ask ourselves why we had them. And so I'm looking at this huge pile that I just built and say, why is that there? And it tries to help me with that answer. And it says, wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? The ego didn't work. Fear is of my ego. Fear is the biggest tool of my ego. It brings out the big hammer with the fear of death, because I can always turn to that as a way to be afraid. And then all of its small iterations are still fear, because if it's not love, it's fear. So irritation, distraction, annoyance, jealousy, everything else, when you look at it really as its base, has a core of fear. And so I don't want that anymore. And so it's telling me why I have it. It's because of self-reliance. It's because I'm using my will and I'm not using God's will. And I have a decision maker, and I can use my will in alignment with God's will. And that's my only appropriate use of my will. But when I do that, I'm moving past the ego and I'm moving into spirit. And in spirit's where I'm going to find peace. In the ego's where I get to stay in fear. And I don't want to be in fear anymore. I choose, the ego wishes, the spirit wills. The spirit wills and the ego wishes. And so when I'm wanting to make change, then I'm wanting to use spirit. And that means I have will. And when I use God's will, then I feel like that's when things change. And in fact, you know, on the third step, when it talks about all you need is a little willingness, that's all you need. And I think it's saying all you need to move to is out of the ego and into just a little bit of spirit, because God as spirit will pull you the rest of the way. And I'm kept sober. And that's how this works, is making sure that I'm looking at things and trying not to look at it in fear, looking at it in faith. It goes on to say, self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve our fear problems or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And so my ego uses my addiction, my alcoholism for its own good. And it, for the longest time, I thought I can will myself not to drink. Well, that wasn't really will. And it was defiance, and I tried it for a long time, but just as the big book describes, it failed. It didn't work. I drank. And so I had to find a different way to exist. And so it's telling me here that, you know, we made it a long way. And it talks about how alcoholics usually are in their life or moving initially at some point pretty far along, because we have a strong will. And that's what I think people don't realize, is if you had will, you could stop drinking. Well, I would argue that the amount of suffering and pain we put ourselves through out of the will to continue to drink is much more than they can ever, than a non-alcoholic can imagine. So it isn't the fact of will, it's that it's misaligned, and it's aligned with the ego instead of aligned with God, with spirit. And so it goes on to say, here's the solution. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. But we're now on a different basis. All right. What basis was I on? I was on fear. Now I'm on a different basis. Well, what is that? It's that there's a better way. We think so. For now, we're on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? The better I align my will with God's will, which God's will for me is peace and joy and love. And when I align my will with his will, to the extent that I do that, is to the extent that I'm able to receive serenity. If I'm not receiving serenity, where am I at? If I'm not happy and serene, where am I based? And I don't want to stop and think about that. I want to keep thinking that it'll get better and I can fix it. And I want to wish my way into a happy future instead of trying to change and live on a different basis, which is living by God's will and to the best of my ability and the best that I know how. And to that extent, I'm given a replacement of fear with peace and with love and with joy. And that's all I really wanted. You know, yeah, I wanted to stop drinking, but when I really act, I just didn't want to hurt anymore. I didn't want to be disturbed. I wanted to find a place of undisturbedness. I wanted satisfaction. And those are found for me when I live my life on a different basis. Do I do that? Maybe 1% of the time, but I think it used to be 0.5. So I'm not going to stop trying. And I feel just the effort of me trying in that, I also find some serenity, but I have a course of action I can take whenever I am in fear. We never apologize for anyone depending on our creator. We can laugh at those that think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fears and direct our attentions to what we have, what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. So when I change the basis of life that I live, I change the outcomes that I get. When I decide to go the way of strength, which is the way of spirit, which is the way of aligning my will with God's will, then I get the fruits of that action. When I don't, I don't. And it's as simple as that. I mean, I find life is a lot easier when it can be for me as black and white as it can be, because I need reference points. My ego loves the gray. And so because I can get lost in the gray, I can't in the black and white. And so I try to keep it that way. When I'm lost in the gray, I take it back to the black and white. Where am I right now? Am I in fear? Why am I in fear? Am I aligning my will with God's will? Is there something God would have me to do? Is there something I could do here? And when I do it, then I generally find I move out of fear and I have some peace. And so, you know, I mean, I think there's so much in here that it's a lot deeper, and it's there's so much that it offers. I don't take my sponsees to this level, but we're here because we want to talk about how I interpret it. I start very simple with my sponsees, but the beauty is there's never a limit on the level that you can grow in AA. There's never a way that you can't surrender more. There's never a time that you can't find just a little bit more that God wants to give you. I sound like a preacher. My dad was a preacher. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. And this is the way I feel. And this is what I'm going to say. And hopefully, you know, I thank you all for being there to listen to me, because people are starting to talk about me talking to myself. So no, not really. I'm just kidding. But I'm glad you're there. And so that's, I guess, what I would say about, you know, my thinking as it comes to fear and the fear list. How am I doing? I'm doing pretty good. Good. Sex. Okay, let's say it. We all laugh about it. It's on page 69. Okay, get over it. But sex is one of the things that is a driving force. And I'm not going to get into as much direct reading as I did, but it says, you know, most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. Well, huh, that sounds like Freud. You know, I mean, that's what he had to say. And the big book, you know, is saying, look, we can trace a lot of everything back to that. So we can't just overlook it. We're not the arbitrators of other people, but we also can't say, let's just avoid that subject, you know? And I think, you know, I know for me, I'm always wanting to think of a new meeting that I could start and what I'd call it. And I think many of us have thought, wouldn't it be fun to go to a meeting that was called the Straight Pepper Diet Meeting, and just to see who would show up. I was in Las Vegas, and they had a meeting called the Swingers Meeting. And I remember I had just gotten sober, and I'm thinking, can I attend this? Should I go? What is the relevance? Because once again, the sex issue, and I don't even know how that all applies. And I called my sponsor, who goes to Las Vegas a lot, and he goes, Mike, that means people who work swing shifts. And I'm like, oh, well, good. Thank you. So I'm very much happy to know that. But it is something that's always in our minds. And so what it tells us, what do we do about this? And what it says is, we review our own conduct over the years past. So I make a list of my sexual issue, you know, my sexual relations, I feel. And then I look where I've been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. And then whom did we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealous, suspicion, bitterness? And then I think this is the most important part. Where were we at fault? That's the fourth column. And what should we have done instead? And that's an option we didn't have on the others. On this one, I look at it and I think, what could I have done differently there? We get this down on paper and we look at it. And then it tells us about shaping a sane and future sex life. And we use God to mold our ideas. My sponsor said, Mike, you know, you and your wife, you know, it's like, and then like many, you know, is she exactly what you want? No, I would change her completely. Really? Yeah. Okay. Well, I want you to make a list. If she was the perfect partner for you, every attribute she has, which this is one of those fun sponsor traps that I love. And so, you know, I make the entire list and he's like, now that's exactly what you're to aspire to. And every time you want to complain to me before you're going to answer to me, how are you doing in that area? Well, I didn't have much complaints because when I realized, you know, what's asked of me, it made me much more understanding in judging her. And where can I make her more of a, how can I help her to become everything that she can be? And I think, you know, relationships are to help in growth, and a sexual partnership is even more so, and it has a deeper overlay, but it's still about how can I join, am I joining with this person to make them the best they can be, which will then allow me the best I can be, or am I getting what I can out of this? Am I joining in this for what I can get out of it? Or am I joining it in the hopes that by making them better, we can be better and I'll be better? That's what I think I try to aspire to. This is what's asking, I believe. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God can alone judge our sex situation. Counseling persons, awesome. This is important because it's the red flag. Counsel with persons is often desirable. For me, AKA sponsor. My sponsor helped me so much with this, but we let God be the final judge. And, you know, it goes on to talk about what if we don't do this? But interestingly, to me, it's attached to the sex issue, but it applies to everything. Suppose we fall short of this chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we're sorry for what we've done and we have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we will learn our lessons. If we're not sorry, if I stay in the ego, if we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we're quite sure to drink. We're not theorizing, These are the facts of our experience. So it attaches it to sex, but I feel anything that I'm doing that is negative to me, you know, whether that's gambling, whether, you know, that's overeating, whether that's speeding, whatever, anything it is, you know, this same standard applies. Am I wanting to change? Thank you. Then I can change. I'm going to tell just a quick story, and I can do it in 5 minutes because it to me applies. You know, I did my fourth step. I did my fifth step. I had a real problem coming to AA because I knew my past history, and I knew that very well could be the end of my relationship. And my wife would leave me when she knew the reality of what I'd done in the past. So I immediately jumped in the ninth step, and my sponsor took me back and said, Mike, we're not there, and we'll deal with that when that comes. You know, right now, your job is to work the steps as we go along and be the best husband you can. So I did that. But still, in the lingering back of my mind was, well, once it comes to the ninth step, it's all over. And so that fear was there. And my sponsor said, you know, Mike, if a point comes and when it comes, your job is to ask for a moment and call me, and then I'll tell you what we need to do. And I'm like, okay. Well, unfortunately, somebody told my wife, my sister-in-law told my wife, hey, if they're in AA, they make these lists and they write down everything they've ever done wrong, everything they're ever fearful, and all sex relationships they've ever had. You could probably find that if you want to. And so I walk home to a wife who says, I've got these lists and I want to talk. And I immediately said, I have to call my sponsor quickly. So I call my sponsor and he says, Mike, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go back in there and you're going to say, and I get a little choked up. I'm sorry. I'm verklempt. You're going to say, you're not that person. Yes, everything on that list is true, but that's not, hopefully I'm living a life that you can see that that's not me. And that's what they did. And the only question my wife had was, on your fear list, you have a fear that if you get sober, that the relationship may not be the same. Is that true? And I said, no, that is not true. That is a fear, not a truth. And it isn't true. And the beauty there is that two things. Number one, that was the solution, and it was never brought up again. And so the steps took me to a place where I wasn't that person anymore. But more importantly, what came to me was the realization that I don't know what's best for me, because if that list had not been found by my life, I think I would have drank, because what would have happened instead is my wife would have nickel and dimed me about, you know, you seemed to spend a lot of time with Sherry. Did you ever have sex with Sherry? And my answer would have been, no, I never had sex with Sherry, because I'm a liar. And my way of dealing with things is lying. And as much as I would have not wanted to, I would have lied. And then I would have drank eventually, because I would have continued down that path it talks about at the end if I continued that. But that decision was taken away from me because I didn't have a chance to lie. She had the list. God gave her the list, you know? And so that's the end of my talk. And I'm sorry, I'm such a whiny ass. And thank you for having me.